Tears streaked down Cleo's cheeks, and she stared into Lucia's eyes for a long time before she finally nodded.
"I'll try," she said.
"Do better than try."
Cleo fell silent for a moment, her brows drawn together.
"Taran wants the air magic out of him. He must have even less control over his emotions than I do, because the lines have gone far higher on his arm than mine have."
She stared down at them, touching the blue lines gingerly with her right hand.
He says he'd rather die than become nothing but a vessel for the air kindred.
Lucia didn't blame Taran at all for this. To have one's body and one's life stolen away by a greedy god, death would be kinder.
"I swear I will figure out how to imprison Kyan again and stop this. All of this. I won't let him win."
Lucia stood up from the bench.
"I need to check on my daughter now."
"Of course,"
Cleo whispered. As she walked down the stone path and into the palace, Lucia's mind spun with a thousand different scenarios of how to stop Kyan and help Cleo. Not so long ago, she wouldn't have cared about the princess's fate. The nursemaid met her halfway to the room that had been designated as Lyssa's nursery.
"Have you left my daughter unattended?"
Lucia asked, alarmed.
"She's fine," the nursemaid assured her. "She's sleeping soundly. Niccolo stopped by and said he'd watch over her while I took my midday meal."
Lucia froze.
"Niccolo Cassian?"
She nodded.
"It's so good to see him again. I practically raised him and his sister as I did the princesses. Such a sweet boy."
Lucia didn't listen to another word. She shoved the old woman out of her way and ran to her chambers, flinging open the door. He stood in front of the cradle with his back to Lucia. His red hair and the distinctive lankiness of his body silhouetted by the light from the balcony.
"Get away from her,"
Lucia warned, desperately trying to summon magic, any magic, to her hand.
"She's as lovely as her mother,"
he murmured, turning to show that he cradled Lyssa in his arms. The baby's gaze was fixed on his red hair, as if fascinated by the bright color. Lucia's heart stuttered to a stop at the sight of her daughter in the grip of a monster.
"Put her down, Kyan."
Kyan turned and raised an eyebrow, his brown eyes finally fixing upon Lucia. For all he looked like Nick, right down to the freckles on his pale face, she could see the ancient fire god that now existed behind his gaze.
"So, you've heard that I've found a new home," he said.
"I swear, I will end you right here and now."
Lucia pulled the amber orb from her pocket, knowing she didn't have the magic to live up to her threats, not today. But she prayed he didn't realize that.
"I only came here to talk,"
Kyan said.
"This doesn't have to be unpleasant. Put my daughter down. I feel like an uncle to this little one. Lyssa is like family to me."
He gazed down at the baby's face.
"Aren't you? You can call me Uncle Kyan. Oh, we'll have great fun together if your mother ever forgives me for my horribly bad behavior."
Lucia gaped at him for a moment before she began to laugh. It sounded more like a hiccup.
"You want me to forgive you? This young and healthy body has given me a fresh outlook on life."
He kissed Lyssa on her forehead before he gently placed her back into her cradle.
"Your pregnancy was impossibly swift, wasn't it? Magically so, I'd say."
When he turned to face Lucia again, she struck him hard across his face. So hard that her hand stung from the blow. Kyan's brown eyes flashed with blue light, and he wiped the trickle of blood at the corner of his mouth with his thumb.
"Don't ever do that again," he hissed.
Lucia fisted her hand, appalled at her own lack of control. but she needed to strike him, needed to try to hurt him. And she'd made him bleed. Kayan didn't bleed. In his former body, that of a fellow immortal millennia had chosen to be his original shell a small eternity ago, she'd watched as his hand was impaled by a dagger. It had been a bloodless injury that had healed in moments. If he bled, that meant that he was vulnerable. His gaze narrowed on the amber orb still in her grip.
"You know what I can do," Lucia said as evenly as she could.
"You know I have the magic to imprison you, just like Timotheus can."
It was the biggest bluff of her entire life, and she prayed that he couldn't sense her dwindling elementia.
"I didn't come here for a confrontation," he said simply. "Funny how seeing you holding my daughter after sneaking into the palace feels very much like a confrontation to me."
Kayan shook his head.
"It's unfortunate that we've come to this, little sorceress. We got along very well for a time. You helped me, and I helped you until our unfortunate disagreement. You turned into a monster made of fire and tried to kill me."
"Not a monster, little sorceress.
A god. And you should know, your grandmother's magic was a pale comparison to yours. She failed in doing what I needed her to do."
Lucia took a breath, tried to remain in control of her erratic emotions.
"I heard."
Kayan's gaze flicked to the orb again.
"Olivia is close by.
If anything happens to me, anything at all, she will summon an earthquake great enough to send this kingdom and everyone in it into the sea. Like nothing more than a tiny pebble cast into a deep pond."
She wondered if he too is bluffing. If he was weak and vulnerable, the Earth Kindred could be the same, despite being within the shell of an immortal watcher.
Finally, she pocketed the orb.
"Say what you came here to say."
He nodded, then ran a hand through his messy red hair.
"I need to apologize for my treatment of you, little sorceress. And then I need to ask for your help."
Lucia almost laughed out loud at this. First Cleo, and now Kayan. It had been quite a day so far. "Go on," she said. Kayan frowned and turned toward the balcony.
"All I wanted was to be reunited with my siblings. Flesh and blood, unlike we've ever existed together before. Free from our prisons to experience what it means to truly exist. And yes, I still believe this world is flawed, and yes, I would still burn it to ash and begin again."
He spared a glance at her.
"But I would be satisfied simply to rule over this imperfect world. And you could be my most trusted advisor."
Ah, so he decided to be charming Kayan again. The same one who'd lulled her into the belief that she could be friends with a god.
"Is that all?"
she replied dryly.
"You just want to rule the world?"
"Yes.
And for that you need my magic." Even if your grandmother hadn't been killed, the ritual she partially performed still wasn't right.
He stared down at his hands. The triangle symbol for fire magic was visible on his palm, but pale like an old scar. She frowned.
"What's not right about it?"
"Nothing has been right since my awakening. Millennia intervened, as she always did. She helped me take form more than a millennium ago, and I suppose she felt herself knowledgeable enough to do it again when the time came. I woke in my former body without your direct intervention. I'm certain she sent one of her slaves to raise me with his or her blood, strengthened by the massacre of the battle I woke to, far weaker than I should have been. Far weaker than if you'd done it yourself, as it was meant to be." Lucia fell silent, allowing Kayan to speak. She'd wanted to know this since the beginning. Why she'd been able to see his location on the glowing map of Mitica during the location spell with Alexius. but she'd sensed that he was already awake. Idiotic Millennia, allowing her impatience to be reunited with her lover to taint her decisions. Perhaps Lucia should thank Millennia for her impatience, though. It had kept the Fire God from awakening as powerful as he could have been.
Tell me.
How are Cleona and Taryn? Kayan asked, after falling silent for a moment, seemingly lost in his own thoughts.
Fine, she lied.
He sent an amused look at her.
I find that hard to believe. They seem fine to me. Totally in control of themselves and their bodies. Unlike Nick and Olivia. It only shows me even more how my grandmother failed you.
She certainly did, he agreed.
Perhaps they will learn to channel the magic within them as well as I can.
You think so, do you?
Sure.
It was what Cleo said she wanted, to control her magic. Kayan shook his head.
Cleona and Taryn cannot control what doesn't belong to them. And if they try, they will fail and die.
He turned to lock gazes with her.
But I think you know this already.
Lucia tried so hard not to react, but she felt the truth of what Kayan said deep in her gut.
How do I save them?
You can't. Their lives are forfeit. Their bodies have already been claimed by my siblings.
Then find other bodies if you must.
Her heart pounded hard as she resisted what he said.
Is that even possible?
Impatience flickered in his brown eyes.
You aren't listening to me, little sorceress. I am offering you the chance to salvage what is left of this world, to join with me and my siblings as we become all-powerful.
With my help, she reminded him.
With my magic?
Magic she didn't currently possess, at even a fraction of the strength she needed. She couldn't help him even if she wanted to.
Everything was so perfectly aligned that night, he said with annoyance. The sacrifices, the storm, the location. It should have worked.
But nothing worth having comes easily, does it?
I need you to perform the ritual again, little sorceress. With your blood, with your magic. Fix what your grandmother began.
Of course, this was why he needed her. It was not to apologize and make amends. It was to gain ultimate power.
When?
She whispered.
Do you want me to perform the ritual now? Will you threaten to kill everyone in this palace if I refuse?
You do despise me, don't you? His jaw clenched.
No, I will not make any further threats today. I don't want it to be that way between us anymore. All I need from you right now is a promise to help us.
And if I refuse? He sent a dark look toward her.
If you refuse, Cleona and Taryn will suffer greatly before they finally lose their fight against my siblings. The air and water kindred will take control of their new shells. It's only a matter of days. Then, even if it's at a slightly lesser level than I'd planned, the kindred will be reunited, and we will cause great pain and damage to this world that you value, little sorceress. You've seen what I can do, even at a fraction of my true strength, haven't you?
Suddenly Lucia could barely breathe, remembering the many villages he'd set ablaze, the screams of his victims, the screams of her victims.
When?
She asked again, her voice barely audible. A smile touched his lips, erasing the serious look he'd had a moment before.
Pardon me for being vague, little sorceress, but you'll know when. You are a part of this. Your magic, Eva's magic. It's been a part of this from the very beginning.
Lucia squeezed her eyes shut, wanting to block him out by any means necessary.
You've said what you came here to say, she whispered. Now please leave.
Very well.
Oh, And please don't blame the nursemaid for leaving the room. She trusts this face. Many do. It's a good face, don't you think? Niccolo is not nearly as tall and conventionally handsome as my prior form, but I'm quite partial to his freckles.
He paused, as if waiting for a reply. When none came, he continued.
I will see you soon, little sorceress.
Kayan left the room without another word, and all she could do was watch him go. When he was out of sight, she rushed to the side of the cradle. Lyssa was fast asleep.
Chapter 13 Magnus Aranus.
I don't think you understand,
Magnus said to the green-uniformed Cretian guard at the palace gates.
I am Prince Magnus Damora.
The guard pursed his lips, casting an appraising look over the length of him.
I'll admit you do bear a striking resemblance to the portraits I've seen of him,
he replied.
But the real Prince Magnus is dead. Clearly, you're new around here.
Magnus glanced at Asher, who wore the hood of his gray cloak over his head to keep his face from view. Asher just shrugged. No help there.
I demand an audience with King Gaius,
Magnus said with as much royal dignity as he had left.
Who is my father? We'll leave the determination of the status of my existence to him, shall we?
The guard sighed and waved the pair through.
He likely doesn't care if he is just allowed a potential assassin access to the palace grounds,
Asher muttered to Magnus. Likely not. Upon entrance into the palace itself, they found themselves in a vast, seemingly endless hallway, every column along its length chiseled with artistic perfection. Some said the palace had existed in this very place when the goddess Cleona ruled. Someone had to be blamed for importing this much annoyingly white marble into Mitica.
Frankly, I'm surprised your sister didn't take my father's life when she had the chance,
Magnus said, his voice now echoing against the marble walls.
I'm surprised, too,
Asher replied.
It's very unlike her.
They encountered a guard who wore red as they walked.
Where is the king?
Magnus asked him. The guard's eyes widened.
Your Highness, I'd heard that you were...
dead?
Magnus finished for him.
Yes, that seems to be the general consensus. Where's my father?
The guard bowed.
The throne room, Your Highness!
He felt the guard's surprised gaze on him as he and Asher continued down the corridor.
The Mary and some Christians working side by side,
he said under his breath.
How friendly.
Amara has no further interest in Mitica,
Asher said.
I'd be surprised if this occupation lasts more than another month before she requires the full strength of her army at the next place she plans to conquer.
Let's not count it as a victory until it actually happens.
No, definitely not.
Asher thought it best that Magnus see his father by himself. Magnus agreed. The pair parted ways as the hallway forked into two directions. The tall doors to the throne room appeared before Magnus, and he came to a halt, taking a deep breath into his lungs. Nervously, he twisted the heavy golden ring on his left hand, as he summoned the courage he hadn't thought he'd need today. Finally, he stepped forward and pushed the doors open. The king sat upon the throne, a position Magnus had seen him in, here and in Lemeros, 1,000 times before. There were 6 men at the bottom of the stairs leading up to the royal dais, each holding a piece of parchment.
The business of a kingdom must continue, he thought. In good times and in bad.
King Gaius looked up, and his eyes locked with Magnus's. He stood up so quickly that the silver goblet he held clattered to the floor. Then he looked down at the men.
Leave,
he said.
Now!
They didn't argue. Collectively, they filed past Magnus and swiftly exited the room.
Don't let me interrupt, Magnus said, his heart pounding hard. You're here,
the king said, his voice hushed.
You're actually here.
I am.
So it worked.
Magnus knew exactly what he meant. He touched the ring, then pulled it off of his finger.
It did.
His father drew closer, his face pale as he inspected Magnus, walking an entire circle around him.
I had held hope for so long that the Bloodstone's magic might save you. But that hope had faded completely.
Seems that everyone believes me dead,
Magnus said.
Yes.
The king drew in a shaky breath.
We know Curtis buried you alive, and that he tortured you first. But you're right here in front of me, not a spirit, not a dream. You're here and you're alive.
Magnus's throat constricted, and he found himself at a loss for what to say, what to think. He didn't realize it would be this difficult.
I'm surprised you seem to care. It's not as if you haven't attempted to send me to my grave long before Curtis did.
I fully deserve that.
Magnus held the ring out to him.
This is yours.
The king didn't reach for the ring. Instead, he embraced his son so tightly that it became difficult for Magnus to breathe.
Unexpected,
Magnus managed.
Quite unexpected.
I have failed you as a father so many times that I've lost count.
Gaius gripped Magnus's face between his hands.
But you're here. You're alive. And now I have the chance to try to make amends to you.
This certainly helped.
Magnus indicated the ring again.
Take it back now. It belongs to you.
King Gaius shook his head.
No. It's yours now.
Magnus frowned.
Don't you need it?
Look at me,
the king said.
I have recovered from my afflictions. I have no need for the Bloodstone's magic anymore. I feel strong, stronger than I have in many years, and ready to rule again. With your assistance. If you'll give it to me.
Magnus swallowed hard.
I will. Of course I will.
I'm very glad to hear that.
I heard what happened with the ritual,
Magnus said when he found his voice again.
Is Cleo all right? Is she suffering at all?
King Gaius pursed his lips, his expression souring.
She seems as fine as possible, given the situation. You've heard about everything. About your grandmother?
He nodded again.
Asha found me and told me what happened. Where is Cleo now?
Likely shoving her unwelcome nose into the private affairs of others,
the king muttered. After worrying about her safety for days, this was an incredible relief.
And Curtis?
I have a search in progress for him,
the king said.
He hasn't been spotted in days, but I feel he may have returned to the palace to see his father.
Lord Gareth is here.
He was.
The king paused.
Lucia has returned to us. If she hadn't, I doubt that Amara would have allowed us to leave without difficulty.
Magnus's mind went blank for a moment.
Lucia? Is here?
Yes.
Gaius's gaze shifted past Magnus.
Actually, she's standing right behind you.
His breath catching in his chest, Magnus turned slowly around. Lucia stood, framed by the throne room's doors, her eyes as wide as saucers.
Magnus,
she whispered.
I... I saw you dead. I felt it in my very soul. But you're here. You're alive.
The last time he'd seen her, she'd been aligned with the Fire Kindred, searching for magical stone wheels on the Lemurian palace grounds. She'd been cruel, quick to violence, and she had used his love for her as a weapon to manipulate and wound him. But when Cayan had tried to kill Magnus, Lucia saved his life. Despite Magnus's claims that his sister would return, that she wasn't continuing to help Cayan, in his heart, he had honestly thought he'd never see her again. But here she was. Magnus tentatively moved toward Lucia, half of him on guard for something horrible to happen, but nothing did. Her eyes were filled with tears as she gazed up at him.
"I'm alive," he confirmed. "I'm sorry," she blurted then, the tears spilling to her cheeks. "I'm so, so sorry for everything I've done."
He almost laughed at such a surprising and uncharacteristic outburst.
"No. No apologies, please. Not today, my beautiful sister. The fact that you're here with us again after everything that's..."
His voice dropped off, as he suddenly realized that there was a strange bundle in his sister's arms. A baby.
"Who is that?"
he asked, stunned. She gazed down at the infant, a smile touching her lips.
"This is my daughter," she said,
as she pulled the blanket away from the baby's face.
"Your niece." "His niece."
Lucia had a baby. A baby girl. Exactly how long had he been trapped in that grave?
"How?"
was all he managed to blurt out in reply.
"How?"
she grimaced.
"I really hope I don't have to explain such things to you."
"Alexius," she nodded. Magnus squeezed his eyes shut, fighting against the hot wave of rage that threatened to hit him.
"I'd kill him if he weren't already dead,"
he growled.
"I know."
Magnus glanced at his father.
"Lysa's going to be a very special young woman one day," he said.
Clearly, the king had had much more time to come to terms with this world-jarring revelation.
"Lysa, is it?"
Magnus touched the soft blanket and looked into the baby's blue eyes. Blue like Lucia's eyes.
"Well, she's gorgeous. But how could she be anything but?"
Lucia touched his hand.
"Magnus, how did you survive?"
Before he could answer, he noticed that she was staring down at his ring.
"What magic is this?" she asked breathlessly. "I've never felt anything like it before."
"The Bloodstone," the king said.
"This is the Bloodstone? It is dark magic. The darkest I've ever felt."
"Yes, I'm sure it is. And it's the only thing that saved both your brother's life and my own. For that, and only that, we can thank your grandmother."
"This must have been what I felt,"
Lucia whispered.
"This darkness, this feeling of death surrounding this ring. I don't like it."
"Perhaps not. But without this piece of dark magic, your brother and I would both be dead,"
the king said solemnly. "Magnus, I'm very glad you arrived today.
I plan to give a speech at midday tomorrow to show that I am again in power here, and that Amara has abandoned her new kingdom. I need the citizens of this city to believe in me."
"First time for everything,"
Magnus countered.
"I want you by my side. And Lucia as well."
"Of course,"
Magnus said without hesitation. He turned to Lucia.
"We will talk more soon." "Why not now?"
she asked.
"I need to find Cleo. Where is she?" "Currently? I have no idea. But she can't be far.
Lucia appeared as if she wanted to argue against his plans, but she closed her mouth and nodded instead.
Go find her.
Magnus was already halfway out the door. Chapter 14 Cleo Uranus. If Lucia couldn't or wouldn't help her, then she had to help herself. Cleo decided to scour the library for more books on kindred magic and on any record of the goddess Valoria in particular. The goddess had water magic within her. By all accounts, she had been considered the embodiment of this magic. Cleo had come to learn that Valoria had been a greedy watcher, one who'd stolen the crystal orbs from the sanctuary. By touching them with her bare hands, she'd become corrupted by them.
Corrupted,
Cleo thought, as she studied the squiggling lines on her left palm. What a strange word to use for being possessed by an elemental god. Valoria and Cleona were enemies, and in a final fight to gain ultimate power, they had destroyed each other. At least, that was how the legend went. She studied an illustration of the goddess drawn by the scribe of the first book about Valoria she'd taken from the library. The symbols of earth and water magic were on her palms. She had dark flowing hair, a beautiful heart-shaped face, a glowing crown upon her head. The gown she wore in this picture was low enough in the front that it showed off half of the spiral marking on her chest. It wasn't the same spiral that Taryn bore that linked him to the Air Kindred. This was different, more complex in shape. Cleo now knew this marked Valoria as a watcher before she'd become a goddess. As she flipped through the pages, she glanced down at the goblet of peach cider Nerissa had brought her.
I froze the god. I can make it rain. I can coat walls with ice,
Cleo whispered to herself.
Surely I can do something with this cider. Simple magic. Something to show me I have a chance to control this.
Her heart now pounding, she held the goblet in her hand and focused on the liquid within. She willed it to freeze within its container. She concentrated until perspiration broke out on her forehead, but nothing happened. Finally, she slammed the goblet down on a nearby table and let out a small shriek of frustration as its contents splashed over the side. But her scream was cut short by a sensation she'd become entirely too familiar with. That of a wave of water flowing over her, covering her eyes, her nose, her mouth. She was drowning.
No!
She staggered backward until she felt the cool stone wall at her back. She pressed her hands against it as she forced herself to take slow, even breaths. This wasn't real. She was fine. She wasn't drowning. She wasn't dying. Cleo looked down at her hand to see that the water magic symbol glowed with blue light, and more vein-like lines branched out from the ones already there. The marking now wrapped around her entire hand and forearm. A chill of dread went through her at the sight of it, and she had a sudden, painful realization of what it might be. The water kindred, slowly working its way to the forefront of Cleo's consciousness. Fighting Cleo for control of her own body. Cleo burst from her room, needing to be somewhere, anywhere else. She moved down the hallways of the palace so swiftly, she nearly got lost as she tried to find the exit back into the courtyard. Finally outside, she managed to take in great gulps of fresh, sweet air. Something moved beyond the trees, and she heard the sound of metal clashing. Alarmed, she drew closer to see what or who it was. She let out a sigh of relief. Jonas and Felix were practicing their swordplay under the shade of the arched pavilion in the center of the courtyard.
"You're getting rusty,"
Felix said. He was bare-chested, his muscles flexing as he thrust his sword forward.
"Haven't fought in a while."
Also shirtless and with his back to Cleo, Jonas managed to block the move with a grunt.
"Not with a sword. You've been relying on your new girlfriend to save your arse with her fancy magic. It's making you soft."
"Princess Lucia is not my girlfriend,"
Jonas growled. Felix smirked at him.
"Don't worry. I won't challenge you for her.
I'm through with complicated women with too much power to wield. She's all yours.
I don't want her.
Whatever you say.
Felix snorted.
I think we're done for today. You might want to put on your shirt before anyone gets a glimpse of your little secret.
Good point.
Jonas grabbed a white shirt from the ground nearby, pulling it on over his arms. When he turned, Cleo saw exactly what Felix referred to. Jonas's little secret was a mark on his chest. The spiral mark of a watcher. For a moment, she couldn't move. Couldn't think. But then Cleo forced herself to follow them out of the courtyard and back into the palace, still unseen by either of them. They parted ways at a branch in the hallway. Cleo followed Jonas, hurrying to keep up with his long strides. She followed him right out of the palace and into the City of Gold. Where was he headed? As she followed him through the winding streets, she racked her brain, trying to remember if she'd ever seen that marking before, or if she'd ever seen him without his shirt on. She had. In the Wildlands, when he'd kidnapped her in a rebel plot to coerce King Gaius into stopping construction of his imperial road. Instead, the king had sent swarms of his soldiers out to search for the princess he'd betrothed to his son in hopes of ingratiating the Demora family with their new Iranian citizens. Jonas had been injured, shot with an arrow. He needed Cleo's assistance to bandage the wound. There had been no mark on his chest then. The rebel left the walled city entirely, a bow and quiver of arrows slung over his shoulder. Cleo pulled up the hood of her cloak, staying far enough behind him so as not to be noticed. He took a pathway toward an inlet the ship that had brought him and the others to Aranus had sailed past on their way to the palace docks. He walked as if he knew exactly where he was going, as if he'd been there before. It was a small, secluded cove that Cleo and her sister had visited regularly in simpler times, one shielded by a steep cliff. From the small sandy beach, they would watch ships pass by on their way to and from the palace docks. Waves lapped against the shore of the wide canal, so wide that Cleo could barely see the other side of it. Seabirds waded in the shallow shore water, hunting for food. Carefully navigating the pathway down to the cove itself, she watched as Jonas paused, aimed his bow and arrow, and let it go. Jonas swore under his breath as a fat rabbit scampered away. He was the guest of King Gaius, with a banquet of food ready from dawn to dusk, and he was hunting rabbits.
"Watch your step, princess,"
Jonas said without looking up at her.
She froze in place.
"Yes, I know you've been following me since we left the palace," he said.
Feeling oddly exposed, Cleo joined Jonas on the small sandy beach with her head held high.
"Why are you hunting rabbits?"
"Because hunting rabbits makes me feel normal," he replied. "Wouldn't that be nice? To feel normal again."
"Perhaps."
She scratched her left arm that bore the twisting, vine-like blue lines.
"Please don't kill anything. Not today. There's no need for it."
Jonas paused, giving her a sidelong look.
"Do I have to explain to you where the meat on your dinner plate comes from?"
Cleo took a deep breath and let it out slowly.
"Why do you have the mark of a watcher on your chest?"
He didn't speak for a moment, but he put his bow and arrow down on the sandy ground and looked out onto the calm water.
"You saw that,"
he said. She nodded.
"I saw you and Felix in the courtyard."
"I see."
"And now you have questions,"
he said, turning to face her.
"Only the one, really,"
she admitted. Jonas rubbed his chest absently.
"I'm not a watcher, if that's what you're thinking. But it seems like I have this well of magic inside me. One I can't easily access no matter how hard I try. I know a little of what that's like."
"Yes. I'm sure you do."
Jonas turned to stare out at the crystal blue water.
"An immortal named Fedra gave her life to save mine a while back,
just after she'd healed me a moment from death. I've been told that I absorbed her magic. I don't understand it. I don't know why, only that it happened. And then Olivia healed me too, and... He shook his head. And that original magic acted like a sponge, soaking up more and more. Soon after that, the mark appeared.
Oh, Cleo said. That actually makes sense.
He laughed.
Perhaps to you it does. But you say you can't use this magic.
No. His gaze moved to the markings on her arm.
What is the plan, princess?
Cleo looked up at him, startled.
The plan? The plan to fix all of this. I honestly don't know.
She studied him for a moment in silence.
Show me your mark.
He hesitated at first before he slowly unbuttoned the front of his shirt. She moved closer to him, placing her hand on his skin, and feeling his heartbeat as she looked up at him.
My mark glows sometimes, she said.
He looked down at her hand before he met her gaze fully.
Lucky you.
A smile tugged at her lips. Jonas could always make her smile.
Oh, yes. So lucky. I have no illusions about your feelings for me anymore, princess, he said. I know you loved him, that you mourn him. And I'm sorry for your loss. It will be a very long time before that pain goes away.
Cleo's throat had quickly become so thick that it was impossible to respond with anything except a nod. Jonas tentatively reached for her hand. When she didn't pull away from him, he took it in his and squeezed it.
I am here for you, princess, today and always. And you need to find a way to control this magic within you by any means possible. I know, she replied. I ask Lucia to help me.
His gaze flicked to hers again.
And what did she say? She said she'd try.
His brow furrowed.
I should check on her. I haven't seen her yet today. How strange to think that the two of you have become friends.
Very strange, Jonas agreed. His gaze held an intensity then, and for a moment Cleo was certain he was going to say more to her. His hand brushed against the sheath at his waist, and she saw the golden hilt of a dagger.
Do you still have Aaron's horrible dagger?
She asked.
After all this time?
Jonas pulled his hand away from the weapon.
I need to go back to the palace now. Are you coming?
Cleo turned to the canal to see that a ship was passing in the distance, on its way from the palace to the Silver Sea.
Not yet. I'll be back shortly. Go check on Lucia. But promise me something.
Yes?
Don't kill any rabbits.
I promise you, he said solemnly. No harm will come to a single Oranian rabbit today. With one more glance back at her, Jonas left Cleo there in the sandy cove. Alone on the beach, Cleo walked toward the water, which lapped at her golden sandals. She focused all her attention on the ocean, trying to feel some sort of affinity with it, since it matched the magic within her. But she felt nothing here. No sense of drowning. No desire to walk into the salty water until it covered her from head to toe. She tentatively looked down at the mark on her hand and its branching blue lines. She didn't want to be tentative or frightened. She wanted to be strong. He would want her to be strong.
I miss him so much,
she thought, as her eyes began to burn.
Please, please let me think of him and let that memory make me stronger.
Cleo wasn't even sure whom she prayed to anymore, but she still prayed.
Well, that was quite a romantic sight, wasn't it? The rebel and the princess, together again in their mutual admiration. And now I'm imagining his voice,
she whispered.
his jealous, angry voice.
"Are that to be your choice entirely, princess? Shall I kill him slowly or quickly?"
Now Cleo frowned. He sounded so real. Far more real than any fantasy. Cleo turned around slowly to see the tall, broad-shouldered figment of her imagination standing no more than 3 paces away from her, scowling.
"I know I should be concerned about your situation."
Magnus gestured toward her.
"My wife, the water goddess. And even before I had learned what had happened, I'd been beside myself in my haste to get back to you, thinking you might be Curtis's prisoner by now."
She gaped at him.
"Magnus? And I am deeply, painfully concerned, don't think I'm not. But to follow you here from the palace, only to see you with Jonas Agalon," he growled. "It's not all right with me."
She could barely form thoughts, let alone words.
"Nothing happened."
"It didn't look like nothing."
Tears splashed to her cheeks.
"You're alive."
The remainder of the fury faded from his brown eyes.
"I am."
"And you're here, right in front of me?"
"Yes."
His gaze fell to her left hand, and the marks from her ongoing internal battle with the Water Kindred.
"Oh, Cleo."
With a ragged sob, she threw herself into his arms. He lifted her off the ground to embrace her tightly against his chest.
"I thought you were dead,"
Cleo sobbed.
"Lucia, she saw it. She did a location spell and sensed you were dead, and I..."
She rested her head against his shoulder.
"Oh, Magnus, I love you. And I've missed you so much I thought I might die from it. But you're here."
"I love you too," he whispered. "I love you so much."
"I know."
"Good."
Then he crushed his mouth against hers, kissing her hard, stealing her breath and giving her life at the same time.
"I knew you'd be fine no matter what," he said to her when their lips parted. "You're the bravest and strongest girl I've ever known in my life."
Cleo ran her hands over his face, his jaw, his throat, wanting to prove to herself that this was real and not just a dream.
"I'm sorry, Magnus."
He finally placed her back down on the sandy ground, holding her gaze intensely.
"For what?"
"It seems I'm apologizing a lot today, but I have to. I'm sorry that I lied to you. That I hurt you. I'm sorry I blamed you for everything horrible that happened. I'm sorry that I didn't see how much I loved you from the very beginning."
She wiped at her tear-filled eyes.
"Well, not the very beginning."
"No,"
he allowed with a wince.
"Certainly not."
"The past is forgotten."
She placed her hands against his chest, reveling in the feel of him, solid and alive. And here.
"No, only this. I love you with all my heart. All my soul."
Her voice broke on the raw truth in her words.
"That losing you destroyed me. And I never, never, ever want to feel that way again."
Magnus stared down at her now, as if shocked by the intensity of her words.
"Cleo."
Cleo pulled his face down so his lips could meet hers again, and it was as if the 1,000-pound weight that had been attached to her ankle for more than a week, pulling her further into the depths of the ocean, drowning her slowly and painfully, had finally released. His kiss was everything, so deep and true and perfect. Magnus picked her up again, his strong arms easily holding her weight as he moved away from the edge of the water.
"I've missed you so much,"
he breathed against her lips as he pressed her up against the side of the cliff so she could feel every line, every edge of his body against hers.
"I swear I will make it up to you. All the horrible things I've said and done. My beautiful Cleona, say it again. What you said just now."
She almost smiled.
I think you heard me.
Don't tease, he growled, his gaze intense. Say it again.
I love you, Magnus. Truly and madly. Forever and ever, she whispered, hungry for his kiss again, starving for it. And I need you. Now. Here.
She'd already begun to loosen the ties of his shirt, desperate to feel his bare skin against hers, with no barrier between them. His mouth was on hers again, desperate and hungry. Magnus groaned deep in his throat as Cleo ran her fingernails up his chest, pulling his shirt over his shoulders. He slid his hands beneath the edge of her embroidered skirt before he froze, his lips parting from hers. A deep frown creased his brow.
"Damn it. What's wrong?" she asked. "We can't do this," he whispered.
A breath caught in her chest.
"Why not?"
"The curse." For a moment, Cleo had no idea what he meant. But then she remembered, and a small smile parted her lips.
"There is no curse."
"What?"
"Your grandmother made that story up to deceive your father, to explain why my mother died in childbirth. But it's not true. There's no witch's curse on me. It was all a lie."
Magnus didn't move. He studied her for several moments as he held her, pressed up against the cliff side, their faces at the same level, eye to eye. "No curse," he whispered, and his lips curved into a smile.
"None at all."
"And the kindred magic within you?
It's a big problem, but not at this exact moment."
"So we can deal with it later." She nodded.
"Yes, later."
"We're certain?"
"Completely certain."
"Good." This time when Magnus kissed her, there was no restraint. No stopping or waiting. No doubt or fear. There was only this exquisite moment that Cleo wanted to last forever. Finally reunited with her dark prince. Chapter 15. Magnus. Uranus. Magnus knew they should have returned to the palace hours ago, but they hadn't. Instead, they watched the sun sink into the horizon in the west, turning the sky shades of purple, pink, and orange.
"I like it here,"
he said, his fingers threaded into Cleo's long golden hair.
"It's officially my favorite place in all of Uranus. And this rock at my back, my favorite rock in all of Mithika."
Cleo nodded, nestling closer to his side.
"It's a good rock."
He took her left hand in his, tracing the blue lines that spread from the water magic symbol on her palm.
"I don't like this."
"Neither do I."
"But you said you're in no distress."
"I said it. I meant it, but..."
"But what?"
"But..."
she began.
"It is a problem."
"An understatement, certainly."
"I want to figure out how to use this water magic, but I can't. It doesn't work that way. At least, not that I've discovered yet."
Magnus remembered stumbling through the forest that dark night, coming upon the campfire of the Fire Kindred.
"I saw Cayenne," he said.
Cleo gasped and pulled away so that she could look into his eyes.
"When?"
"After the grave."
He'd already told her some of what he'd gone through, not wanting to dwell on the darker moments. She knew his father had given him the Bloodstone, and that if he hadn't, Magnus would be only a memory now.
"He let me believe he was still Nick for a while. Like he was toying with me. He wanted me to tell you that when he arrives, you need to join him. I would have torn him apart right then, but he looked so much like Nick."
"He is Nick,"
Cleo said, her voice pained.
"For a moment, right after it happened, I nearly stabbed him in the heart." even knowing it would kill Nick. I wasn't thinking straight. I'm so grateful that Asha stopped me.
That sounded like something the Kreshian prince would do.
Of course he did. I'll never go with Kayan, she said, shaking her head. Not for any reason.
Magnus's chest tightened at the thought of losing her.
He was going to brand me. Somehow. Making me into a slave with magic so I'd do as he said. He reached for me and... stopped. Something stopped him. And it gave me the chance to escape.
What was it?
She asked, breathless.
He tried to remember that dark night full of pain and confusion.
I don't know. I thought it might have been Asha, that he'd found some magic to fight against the kindred, but it wasn't him. Still, something helped me get away.
Could it have been Nick himself? Fighting against Kayan somehow?
Possibly, he allowed.
But the more he thought about it, the more he wondered if it could have something to do with the Bloodstone. Lucia had been repelled by its magic. Perhaps Kayan felt the same.
Still, Cleo, with the water kindred within her, seemed fine being close to him with this kind of magic, dark magic as Lucia called it, on his finger.
Cleo shook her head.
To think, our troubles used to consist of a battle for the throne. It seems so inconsequential now.
Well, I wouldn't say entirely inconsequential, he said. It will be nice when every trace of Amara Cortis leaves this kingdom.
I forgot all about her for a moment.
So did I.
He kissed her forehead, threading his fingers through her sun-warmed, silky hair.
We will find a way to save Nick, I promise we will. You, and Nick, and Olivia, and even Taryn, he grimaced. If we must.
Cleo laughed nervously, burying her face against Magnus's chest.
Taryn is trying to be strong. But I know he's terrified about losing control of his life like this.
I've no doubt that he is.
Magnus knew he'd feel exactly the same. He watched the sun sink further over the water. There was very little daylight left. They had to face reality again. Far too soon.
Best slip your gown on before Agalon strolls back here looking for you and gets far too much of an eyeful of my beautiful wife.
Magnus reached to the side and grabbed his shirt.
Wouldn't want to break his heart any further by seeing you like this with me. Although, come to think of it, I'd be all right with that. Final nail in the coffin, if you'll excuse the expression.
Jonas is a good person,
Cleo said firmly as she dressed. He watched her with great appreciation, every move, every gesture.
Stella, of course he is.
He cares a great deal about Lucia.
Magnus made a sour face.
Don't even put that potential pairing into my mind. I've enough foul dreams to deal with as it is.
Magnus stood up and took Cleo's face between his hands so he could kiss her again. He knew he would never tire of the taste of her lips. A near magical mix of strawberries, salt water, and the individual and intoxicating taste of Cleona Bellows herself. Far more delicious than even the finest and sweetest vintage of Pelsian wine. She reached up to stroke the dark hair off his forehead, then traced her fingertips slowly along his scar to his lips.
Marry me, Magnus.
His eyebrows shot up.
We're already married.
I know.
You can't possibly forget that day in the temple, can you? The earthquake, the screaming and blood and death, the vows forced upon you under threat of torture and pain.
Cleo's expression turned haunted, and he regretted reminding her of that horrible day.
That was no proper wedding, she said, shaking her head.
I agree.
A smile touched his lips.
Actually, that was one of my fantasies while in that hateful coffin.
marrying you under the blue sky of Aranus, in a field of beautiful flowers.
She let out a small laugh at that.